Wait for Kaiser to be done.
Bork, bork.
Bork, 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 bork. Bork, bork at the orc, orc. Are you... Is he done yet? Apparently not. Seriously, Dogs and Children, W.C. Fields had it right.
Yep.
Welcome to Preferred Enemies, the Warhammer 40k podcast that's all wah all the time. I'm your host, Rob.
Kevin.
And Richard.
No Dennis with us today. He is out visiting family for the impending eclipse slash, celestial apocalypse coming up on Monday as we're recording. So he will not be joining us, but we would definitely, and we have technically a lot to cover, but without Dennis here, we're not going to talk about half of it because... We're getting a double event. Two new codexes will be dropping the day you hear this, or at least will be going up for pre-order. One of them is Adeptus Custodes, and Dennis is our primary Custodes player, so we wanted to make sure he was on that episode. But the other codex that's being released is Orcs!
Yay!
we weren't sure if, like... Orcs were going to be coming and Custodes were going to be coming out like April, May, but no, it turns out they're coming out the same time, which means Chaos Space Marines will probably be coming sooner than we think as well. But we are going to talk about the new Orc Codex, kindly provided to us by Games Workshop for in exchange for an honest and fair review. But before we get to that, we're going to be talking about a little bit of news and how it impacts 40K. One thing I did want to hit very briefly is that they released the Kill Team MetaWatch update. And while that doesn't directly impact 40K, other than there's a lot of changes for Kill Team, like nine pages of changes in their data slate. So if you play Kill Team, there's a lot to take in here, including a couple of core rule changes. So keep an eye out for that. But at the very end of that article on Warhammer Community, they do note that we'll have more from MetaWatch in a few weeks when we return with point changes to Warhammer 40K. So we are looking at probably another month before we get our quarterly points update, which will hopefully include the Tau Codex and whatever changes we see due to the Orcs and Custodes Codexes as well. The other bit of news is not technically 40K related, but I think it's worth talking about because I do think there's some potential hints and suggestions.
Oh, this won't affect us at all.
No.
We're good. No, it's fine. It's all fine here.
Yeah. So on April 4th, or as some people were hoping, a 3-day late April Fool's joke, which it was not, there's an article about what's leaving the Warhammer Age of Sigmar range. Now, we know they've announced 4th edition is coming and they're starting to roll out like the rules changes, much like we saw with 10th edition. And then they announced, by the way, we are dropping a bunch of stuff from the Age of Sigmar line, specifically hitting, I'd say, 4 armies in particular. 5, technically, if you include Skaven, but we knew Skaven were getting a bunch of updates because they're going to be the villain faction in the new starter box. So, okay, yeah, they're getting a bunch of updates. However, let's start off with this paragraph here. With the latest edition of Warhammer Age of Sigmar on the horizon and the news that every single war scroll in the game has been assessed and balanced, it is a sad but necessary truth that certain miniatures are leaving the range. Every Citadel miniature is a unique piece in the ever-evolving narrative of Warhammer. Unfortunately, we can't continue to sell and support every model we've ever made indefinitely. As we make new models and new books to explore the background and rules, we have to stop producing and featuring some old models. But just like many of you, we still treasure our collection of older miniatures, and we still want to be able to use them in games and forge glorious tales of heroism and adventure on the tabletop. Okay. Yeah, you know what? We've seen a little bit of this with 40K. Like, In Space Marines, obviously, we lost like a lot of the old, we lost all the old bikes. We lost the old land speeders. We've lost assault marines. Like, we lost the Thunderstrike cannon. Thank God. Let it burn in hell forever. there's some things that, like, we lost a number. We lost the Hunter and Stalker, if anyone ever had. I think I did actually play somebody who had them, so I can't. They did exist. Somebody did buy them. But, like, we've seen some of that. And we've seen characters, like, how many codexes have we reviewed so far? We're like, yep, let's pour one out for this character, and this character, and this unit, because they're gone, and we're going to do a couple of those for the orcs. I'll just tell you that right now. But this is probably the biggest range retirement that I've seen. And they...
Well, second biggest range retirement GW's ever done.
What would be the first?
When they whacked an entire game.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it funny that you mentioned that, because it right, turns out there's some reverb.
Right.
So two factions, Beast of Chaos and Bone Splitters Orcs, as well as a number of older Stormcast Eternals from the Sacrosanctum Warrior Chambers, will be receiving free-to-download digital battle tomes. These will feature new background and rules and will be considered for use in competitive play until summer 2025. At this point, they will move over to Warhammer Legends and will no longer be supported for competitive play. So first, I'm going to give them credit for giving people a year to adjust. Giving people a year and change. They're ripping the Band-Aid off now. So on the one hand, thank you for the advance notice. That is very good. We encourage you to continue using your collection for casual play, and we will continue to support this content with rules and balance updates as needed throughout the edition, which implies they still might update points for them, but not update the battle, the war scrolls. They're war scrolls because it's Age of Sigmar. That they won't update those as often, but maybe update points so that for casual games, they'd still be usable, which would be better than what they're doing for 40K. Because if you want to build a list in 40K on their app, you can't use Legends units because that's not even an option. Also, a number of older Warcry and Warhammer's Underworlds warbands for the Slaves of Darkness will go off sale and enter Legends. Many more Underworlds warbands will remain on sale and will be supported only by digital Legends War Scrolls in the next edition. So they're not retiring everything from Warhammer and Underworlds, but most of it's no longer going to be legal for play. A handful of units, mostly those using older resin miniatures, will also be retired from the range. Okay, that's not surprising. Like, if they're not selling it, they're not going to continue supporting it. So far, like, all of this kind of makes sense, although Beast of Chaos and Bone Splitters getting stripped out, that's kind of huge just on its face. They hit us with the details in the Stormcast Eternals first, and... we begin with Sigmar's Finest. So many war scrolls. Believe me, I am getting to 40K stuff. I'm setting up the context.
It'll
here.
Cycle
so,
around. Yeah.
we will get there. I know that if you are not an Age of Sigmar player, this is going to be like me just going blah, 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 blah. Trust me, we'll get there. With so many war scrolls, often for troops who have similar fighting styles, certain units are returning to the distant halls of Azure. Okay, pause there. This is absolutely true. There's a ton. It is the largest range, I think, in Age
of
Sigmar.
Hey, GW, I have a quick question, GW. Who decided to make all of those duplicate models?
Yeah.
You can't see, but I'm doing the Stewie head turn right now. It's like,
it's, yes, you're like at right. a full 90 degree tilt, aren't you?
Like, yes, like you are correct. There is a lot of duplication in this range. Whose fault is that? Anyway, sorry. That annoys me. And they're like, well, we've reevaluated this. And like, stop turning out so many, stop putting them in every box set and with new models. Like the whole meme of like, you know, you can't just open another chamber. The hell I can. You know?
Turns out, no, you shouldn't have.
Right.
It was funny at the time. Now, maybe not so much. But yeah, I'm not going to read off the full list of units, but it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 23 kits. And they have clarified on social media that if this kit makes multiple units, it is all the units that they could make. This includes the entire Sacrosanct Chamber, who have decided to work on the cure for the Curse of Reforging from their workshops in the Realm of Heavens. Now, the reason that's a big deal is the Sacrosanct was the chapter that was basically second edition Age of Sigmar. Keep in mind, we are currently on third and fourth is getting ready to come out. We're on a 3-year cycle. None of these models are more than 6 years old, as far as the Sacrosanct. Some of them are even slightly younger because they came out a little bit later in the cycle. But this was like, if you bought into Age of Sigmar second edition, which a fair number of people did, because that's when the game really started to get good. Because like that's when they figured out, oh, what we did in first edition was a bad idea and we should fix it.
Turns out people do kind of need points.
Yeah, it helps. that's what a lot of people have, because the Soul Wars box contained an entire like Sacrosanct Chamber army, Sequiturs and Evocators. There were a lot of like easy to build kits that were released around this time. There's a lot of characters. Now, they're also retiring a lot of stuff from the first edition box. And yes, that stuff is older, like 9 years old, which is still not ancient for miniatures, because, hey, 40K is still rocking some 3-decade old model lines.
Yeah.
Now, they have some of these are going to get replaced. Like they've already shown off Liberators, which is like the classic like Stormcast Eternal model. Like that was the poster boy Stormcast Eternal. They are getting replaced with a new set of models. They've already shown those off. So we know some of these will get replaced with newer models. But like all the Sacrosanct stuff is apparently just gone forever. And from chatter on various videos and various like Reddit posts on like the Age of Sigmar community, there's a lot of people who are like, I had thousands of points of Sacrosanct Chamber because I love the look of them. And that's what I got into the game with. And now I've been told that I have a year to play it and then I can't go to events anymore unless I buy up a new army. That's going to drive some people away from the game. I've already seen the one page rules people with their knives out starting to sneak into like Age of Sigmar conversation to be like, hey, why don't you play this game where you can use whatever models you want?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I think that's anytime stuff like this happens. I mean, you saw it with when Warhammer Fantasy died. You saw it when 4th edition D&D like kind of flopped. Like, companies will step in to fill the gap, and like people will still be able to use their models, but yeah, not being able to use them in the way that you want really sucks. I will say at least you're still, you know, they're still giving you Legends rules, so you can still play them casually with that, and you're still gonna get some updates. But yeah, I find it very interesting that they're retiring a bunch of these like relatively new plastic kits, which I guess on one side of it, like from a financial standpoint, it kind of is like encouraging, because I guess like they sold enough of these in the last 5 to 6 years to make it make business sense to be able to retire the plastic molds and do new ones. So I guess that's good for the like financial hobby side of it, I guess. But like, yeah, it's very, very frustrating. And it's very frustrating to see models that, you know, like, I don't love the look of the Stormcast, but they're pretty decent models. And, you know, relatively new, and seeing these retired and still seeing, you know, second edition Warp Spiders and, you know, second edition, third edition 40K models that still exist. It's like, why is this your focus right now to retiring things? Like, why not, instead of churning out more Stormcast and retiring relatively new models, why not put a different faction in the starter set? Like, put Cities of Sigmar in the starter set or something else. Like, there's other factions. It doesn't have to be Stormcast. And you could just let that model set, that model line set for a little bit, and then like slowly work on retiring some of these or replacing models. This feels very churn and burn business model. And I think that's what people don't like about this, where it's like, oh, buy our models. They're good for a limited time. And then you have to buy new ones to replace them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is where there's a lot of feeling of betrayal. And I think it's also going like from, as we'll get to like the Beasts of Chaos and stuff, like those players, they're definitely feeling it. But yeah, there's this sense of, well, when I buy a model, like it's a physical investment. I'm buying a model. I'm spending the time and resources to assemble it and paint it so I can use it. And while I will still have a nice, you know, theoretically a display piece when I'm done, now I can't even depend on a model to last a certain amount of time. Like, and again, it's one of these things, like if it was a 30-year-old model, like, or so, like a 20-year-old character or something like that. Okay. Yeah. I can like the argument can be made, like we don't produce this anymore, so we're not going to include it in the newest Codex or Battle Tome. I get that, but these are not old models. Most of these are not old models. And the ones that are older are getting replaced for the most part.
I mean, we've talked about how, you know, the finite length of rules, and the fact that the other thing that, you know, we talked about with fourth edition Sigmar's complete rules reset, blowing out all of those army books that you know might be 6 months old by the time the edition drops, and like the kind of feeling of like, okay, you're gonna do a full reset, and you know 40K has done two full rules resets in the last 5 years. So, you know, people complain about the finite life of these rule sets. Now we're having to worry about the finite length of these models being valid. Like that's a great way to like get people to stop buying products and stop playing your games.
I'm going to throw this into contrast with Atomic Mass Games, the ones that do Marvel Crisis Protocol, Shatterpoint, it's like Star Wars Shatterpoint. Specifically, though, I want to put this in comparison with Marvel Crisis Protocol. They came out with a new starter set for Marvel Crisis Protocol, I think early this year, late last year, early this year. And it had brand new models for all of the Avengers and the villains that were in the original core box. And it's not just new models, it was new rules, like new unit cards for them, like with different sets of abilities representing the same character doing slightly different things. And if this was a Games Workshop game, that would mean now your old starter set is no longer valid and we're not supporting those anymore. But Atomic Mass is not doing that. They are actually releasing, I think, later this year, maybe later this summer, boxes of those original Avengers and I think Cabal is what they call the other group, with the original miniatures and their rules, because like, hey, do you prefer this version? We are still supporting these and selling them, even though we've retired the box set that they were in, even though we've technically replaced them with newer versions, because this is a game where they have multiple versions of the same character. You just can't run them together. But if you like how this one plays, we're still going to support it and sell it. And that it's a very different model, but it means the stuff that you bought when you got into the game is still legal. And I understand they're dealing with a much smaller model pool, although they're starting to get a pretty wide range of characters and they're all individuals as opposed to like being armies. But it kind of throws that into sharp contrast of how different this is, where it's like, yeah, you can't even trust your miniatures to be legal for the game they were designed for.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah. We get to Skaven. There's 16 Skaven kits that are being retired, but they do say many of them will be replaced, which that's not surprising. Some of these are ancient resin or metal miniatures. So yeah, they're going to get replaced. Although a couple of them, like the Arch Warlock, is a relatively new plastic kit. Like that was a newer character they did like at the end of Fantasy. So it's still like 9 years old, but that's still relatively recent. And they do say anything that doesn't receive an updated War Scroll when Battletome Skaven drops will get a Legends War Scroll. So all these are going to be legal until their physical book comes out, and then they'll get legended. It would have been nice for us to get this kind of warning for 40K stuff when we'd start going through codexes. Like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Where'd Longstrike go? Where's Anva? Right.
I think this one makes sense because you got to retire old models at some point. And like, that's, I actually appreciate like the heads up on this. There is still some weird things, as we mentioned before we started recording. Plague Monks, which are one of the oldest kits in the Skaven line, are not included, which means they're probably not getting a new updated kit. And that's just weird that like some of these models that are newer are getting replaced and some older ones that desperately need replacing aren't. So I don't know, very weird way of handling it, but I do at least appreciate the heads up.
Right. Then we get the Bone Splitters. They start off pointing out how diverse the Orc war clans are and then immediately removing a third of that diversity. There are now two flavors of orcs in Age of Sigmar, because three, and again, these were mostly made of old Warhammer Fantasy kits. So that's why they, but I don't know if these models specifically have been added. I don't know. They may have been added to the orcs and goblins lists for Old World, but they're not for sale for Old World, as far as I know.
Right. I don't.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Because that's still a very new release, so I don't. I think it's up for pre-order. I don't know if anybody actually has the new Orc rules, like the slim book.
It was released yesterday, but I don't know. Yeah. So and the Old World is doing a weird thing where they're doing they have the army books. So like we have, so I have the Orc army list that's in the Ravening Hordes book, because I bought it when I bought into the game. But then there's the Arcane Journal like list, like specific special units, so they may be included in there, or they could be included in a later update.
Right,
but I would imagine those models will probably, if they continue to produce them, will just get moved over to the Old World line.
Yeah, so this one, it's, I imagine it's disappointing. It's not completely unexpected, because I don't think there's been much support for them since the game dropped, other than like one Warhammer's Underworld band. So, I mean, it still sucks for people who that's their subset of orcs that they like to play. And they are going to get a Legends and a Battle Tome, so that's nice. They'll still be technically playable. But this little set of seven, I'm not as surprised by. Slaves to Darkness, which is, you know, chaos, you know, generic chaos forces. They have finally found the definitive mortal followers, because like they've got the Chaos Legionaries and like the big heavy armor and the Dark Oath, like barbarian types. And those two groups are considered like that's the core of their army. And they had rules for all these individual little war bands representing how, like, worshippers of chaos appear on, like, different planes, different sections of the mortal realms. So most of these are being retired. They will get Legends War Scrolls, so they'll be playable in casual games. But these units are also being removed from sale. Now, what's surprising about this, there's 11 here, including one of them is a Underworld's warband. What's interesting is Warcry is only what, like 5 years old?
Yeah. And apparently Warcry,
a lot of these are
popular,
very,
so
yeah. And a lot of these are very beautiful, well done. Like, these aren't ancient crap models. These are very nicely done models.
And honestly, like, this type of thing, like these Warcry bands, are one of the things that has gotten me more interested into Age of Sigmar, because you can see how the followers of Chaos and how the Chaos God's influence on different realms comes across. And I just think that's really neat. Like, you actually have, like, the reason for the Old World dying, you know, supposedly was, oh, we were too hemmed in, we couldn't do these crazy, weird, one-off things. And like, okay, you now you're in the Age of Sigmar. You can kind of do whatever. You can create a realm for that. You can do whatever. Create these cool models. Do this weird thing. And that's really cool. And it could be a little one-off thing that you can include in your larger army, or you can play it in Warcry or underground, you know, Underworlds. That's cool. It felt like it expanded the universe out without, like, over bloating the game. And, like, it sucks that these models, that they're not, now they're kind of, like, backing off of that. Like, well, no, we don't really think this fits anymore, so we're just going to stop making these. And I get, like, there's a whole other thing with Warcry and Underworlds that, like, sure, there's probably its own churn and cycle on that that I don't know enough about. But it's very frustrating that GW seems to have this hard line now of these models can only exist in one game and not in another.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and where this concerns me as far as, like, 40K lands is how long before we start seeing things like this for, like, the division between 40K and Kill Team? Like, for example, how long before they decide the Arbites, you know, the, or Arbites, depending on how you want to pronounce it, don't belong in 40K? Like, we know there's supposedly an Agents of the Imperium book in development, but how long until they decide, yeah, you know what, these are, they're more suited for Kill Team? Or the Navy Breachers, how long before they decide, yeah, we're not going to support these for standard 40K? They're really only a Kill Team thing.
I think the difference between the Kill Team, why I'm not as worried about that crossover, is these are Warcry bands are all, like, specifically named bands. There's usually, like, a named leader and then, like, specific models with specific characterful backstories. And this is, like, a specific war band. Whereas in Kill Team, it's like, this is a unit. So, you know, there's not, I would be more worried about Kill Team crossover if there were, like, characters included in the Kill Teams of, like, named, like, this is a named, you know, Arbites that's leading this unit, or this is a named Breacher, this is a named Inquisitor that's doing this. But it's really just more like unit entries, and I think I don't expect they will kill that, because I think
that's a little bit easier. That's only true for the Warhammer's Underworlds bands, which are like three or four models usually. The Warcry bands are like, they have particular war gear, but otherwise they are generic and they're meant to be run, like, you can run multiples of them in the game, technically.
Okay.
Now, granted, they are very diverse as far as, like, the look. They don't provide a cohesive look to the army, which may be what Games Workshop is trying to do. But we also know, based on how they've treated 40K versus Horus Heresy, that they don't want overlap between lines. Although with Kill Team and 40K, it doesn't seem to be as tight, because there's a lot of units that we've been needing updated, such as Striking Scorpions or Space Marine Scouts, that were released via Kill Team, or, you know, Death Corps of Krieg being released via Kill Team. And if they tried to block Death Corps of Krieg from 40K, I think Guards players would riot. So that's not going to happen. So, but it's just one of those things, like, keep an eye out on what they do, because, again, just because you bought something like Horns of Hatshut, that unit is like 2 years old. Like, that, those are very new models, and now they are off sale and retired from the game, from one game they could be played in. And it sounds like they may be, if they're going off sale, they might actually be retired from Warcry as well. We don't know. And that, I think that's the worst part, is there's still pieces of this we don't know, and that's what's really worrying. And then we get to the big one. And I think this is the closest to what we've seen with, like, Horus Heresy stuff getting cut from 40K, and that is the Beast of Chaos, specifically leaving Age of Sigmar, but being shifted back over to Warhammer the Old World. Now, when Warhammer the Old World previews dropped, they did say, like, the Bray Herds of Chaos were going to be one of the factions. Like, they were going to be a supportive faction. So the fact that they're showing up there, that is not surprising. What is surprising is that they're not being supported as dual kits the way, like, Chaos Demons have in the past. Instead, they're getting yanked entirely and pushed back into a square base game.
Yeah, and that's very, I imagine that's very frustrating if you're playing, if you play this army, you got your game, you know, pulled from you. You had to rebase everything onto round bases. You learned to play and deal with Sigmar, and now you're being forced back into it. If you enjoyed playing Age of Sigmar, yeah, not with this army. Like, that's very frustrating. And again, I just don't understand why you wouldn't support factions in dual, you know, in dual games. Like, demons of chaos have been dual supported in fantasy and 40K from the beginning. It's never been a problem. Like, they've never been the best faction, but it's been fine. Like, I don't know, I just don't understand this. I don't understand the refusal to make models that work for multiple games, because people will probably buy and play more games if you can use the models in more places. I don't know. It's very, very weird and frustrating.
I have the suspicion that it really just has to do with where the money goes. And they want to be able to track how popular something is, how, you know, how much money it makes them by being able to say, okay, this sale goes into this bucket. So, because this sale went into the Age of Sigmar bucket, that means that we can devote efforts to, you know, making that much more content or, you know, yeah, rules, models, etc. for Age of Sigmar, when kits are, and the whole army faction, like, may be useful in different models in different games, it confuses the number people.
Sure. Yeah. As a number person, though, I don't care. That's a stupid argument. If that's actually the argument, that's stupid. Like,
right.
As somebody with a background in accounting, like, that's a dumb reason if that's actually the case.
Right. I mean, I didn't say it was a good reason, but I kind of feel like that's probably what the reason is.
Yeah. Because there's, like, yeah, I can understand it a little bit, like, but you see that, I mean, I don't know, you could easily track it by models and like that. And, like, here's the thing, like, I'm sure that if they put out, like, a dual-use skeleton kit that worked for Bone Reapers and Tomb Kings, they could track and be like, okay, well, we sold X amount of old Tomb Kings skeletons, we sold X amount of Bone Reaper skeletons, now we're selling 2x the amount of this new kit. Hey, maybe people are using it for both. Like, it just, I don't know. That seems like a very easy thing to be able to figure out.
So, Rob Symes goes, yeah, the Honest Wargamer, and he used to be a presenter for Games Workshop years ago. He did a video regarding this retirement and kind of one of the reasons they're doing it. And he pretty much confirmed, based on meetings that he sat in on at the time he worked there, that basically the different divisions of Games Workshop, it's partially because of how Forge World was rolled in. And so you have Games Workshop Prime, which is 40K, Age of Sigmar. And that's one of the reasons why they don't mind sharing demons between Age of Sigmar and 40K, because those are both Games Workshop Prime. And then you have Games Workshop Specialty Games, which is what Forge World used to be called. Or what used to be called Forge World. And those have separate balance sheets and separate sales targets, and they do not want overlap between them. And especially now. And so that is why they keep them very separate. And I guess because a lot of the models for Beasts of Chaos were older, I mean, on this list of models that they're retiring, three of them have been produced as new models during the lifespan of Age of Sigmar. And a couple of them were produced in the last few years, because, like, the Endless Spells didn't exist before second edition. The Herdstone was created, I think, with the their second edition battle tome. And the Beast Lord was created for their third edition battle tome, which came out last year, last January. Their battle tome and their Vanguard box is like a year old. people were buying that to get into the game with the understanding that this is going to be a legal army for the foreseeable future. And apparently, I guess because, and for a while, it was actually at the top of the meta. It was doing very, very well. And now it's being entirely retired. And I guess because they are older models and older kits, the specialist games department is kind of taking ownership of it and cutting it away from Age of Sigmar. Now, whether that's Age of Sigmar giving it up because we're producing too much and we need to trim it down, we'll give it to the specialist division, or whether the specialist is like, no, we need Beasts of Chaos, so we're gonna take those. We don't know. But whatever the cause of it is, the result is, yeah, if this was your army, well, not for this game, it's not. And that's gotta hurt, especially like if you were going to support it with a codex, but you weren't planning on supporting, because they would have had to have known long enough in advance that they were not going to support this army. This feels like where we talked about like turn and burn on like the older models. This feels like a bait and switch with selling you a new battle tome and a new starter box, and not the old start collecting box they did. This was their new style Vanguard boxes that they started rolling out in third edition. That feels like a bait and switch. And with the cost of models, that feels like almost a worse one than the, you here's your codex, enjoy it for a month that we've.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, it's bad. And like, I'm not going to say, cause I don't know enough about Horus Heresy. So I know it's a different game than 40K, but Horus Heresy and 40K are fundamentally like the same play experience. You were moving units around, sci-fi setting, like shooting, like the round bases like that. Age of Sigmar and the Old World are different games. And like, not even like similar, like one is rank and flank, one's more skirmish. Like, they are different styles of games. If you have a Beast of Chaos army and you don't want to play rank and flank, you are just screwed. And like, that feels really bad. And the takeaway of all of this for me is like, I feel like GW is, this feels like a turn back towards some of the, like the bad guy GW stuff that we used to talk about, of like short-sighted business plans just for sales. And like, the focus is, well, what can we do to sell more models? Okay, we'll sell you these models, they'll be good for a few years, and we'll sell you new ones. And like, that's, maybe that's good for short-term profits, but that's bad long-term for all of their games. You know, it's bad for Age of Sigmar, it's bad for 40K, it's bad for Warcry, it's bad for Kill Team. Like, it's damaging to the company long-term, and that's damaging to the hobby long-term, and that's very disappointing. Yeah.
Well, and if people don't feel like they can trust the model, you know, like even the ownership of the models they have to be able to continue to use them in some capacity for the game they bought them for, they're not going to be really enthused to buy something else so they can keep playing it.
I mean, I'll say this, like, if I'm not that I'm planning on doing this, but hypothetically, if I was like, well, I'm interested in trying fourth edition Age of Sigmar, but you know what? I see that they're doing all this stuff with models that maybe I can't own long, you know, that maybe there's nothing to do long term. I do have a 3D printer. I could just find some proxy models. That's way cheaper. You know, like that's I think what they're trying to do with some of this is trying to fight the 3D printing market, but this is just going to push people that way. And like, it's short-sighted, and it's really dumb. I just don't get it.
Well, when we were talking about this on our chat, you know, I mentioned this, like I dropped the article link and we were talking about it, and Dennis isn't here, but I'm going to go ahead and read this quote. He says, I think thankfully for me, with the removal of Stormcast and Underworlds, that severs the last interest link for me to playing Age of Sigmar, since the main push for Age of Sigmar was a Stormcast player in their group. And Dennis had always kind of, like, Dennis liked some of the stuff from Underworlds. He really likes the Caradhran Overlords. And so from time to time, he would mention like, yeah, I'm kind of maybe feeling, maybe I'll give it a try. And this has basically told him, nah, I don't want to. This will likely kill interest in our group. So I'm not going to make that leap. There are going to be people who are going to quit the game because their Stormcast armies have been rendered mostly illegal. And they're not really going to relish the fact that they're going to, oh, you want to keep playing? We'll buy a bunch of the new kits. It's like, no, I bought all these because they're models for an army that you put out and supported for a couple of editions. Same with like Beasts of Chaos. Beasts of Chaos players are not going to immediately jump over to buying a new army. They'll play this one. What I see is the people who are into Beasts of Chaos will continue to play it for another year at events. And then after that, if they're, you know, the numbers will drop over time because there's already going to be people who are just going to quit. There's going to be people, you know, it's going to feel like, well, this army is not going to get supported well. And you're going to see it more and more as some armies get battle tomes and as the armies that don't feel farther and farther out of design space. And I don't think some may come back, some may branch into other armies, but I think a lot of them won't. But a lot of them are not going to jump over to Old World because, as you said, it's a completely different game that you're going to have to rebase all your models for.
Like, I like the Old World. I've always been a fan of Warhammer Fantasy. Like, I like it because it is a different style game. But yeah, like that's not for everybody. Not everybody's going to want to do that. Not everybody's going to want to rebase their army again to play a different game. Like they bought this army to play Age of Sigmar, not the Old World. So yeah, it's very. That's the one that to me feels the most egregious. Like retiring relatively new Stormcast models. Yes, that's bad. That feels kind of inevitable, and like GW is maybe admitting to like a mistake, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't have turned out quite so many of these. That's bad, but like, okay, something's going to get replaced, and you know, you can still use the older models, and you might be able to like, you know, to work with them and make them work. The Warcry stuff, yeah, it sucks. I really liked the Warcry bands because they are interesting and flavorful, and I don't like what it pretends for like future model, you know, specialty games and stuff like that, but I kind of understand it. You want to streamline and cull the game, you know, the game down a little bit, okay, but yeah, just removing these armies simply because they're dual kits and we don't want to support them in two lines is dumb.
Mm-hmm. No, totally agreed. And one other thing this kind of kicked off in my mind was, we've been pushing a lot for Games Workshop to get rid of the Codex model and to move to like digital releases of rules. And trust me, this is going somewhere. And one of the things about like physical books is when you have a physical book, you have a book. And as much as I hate how they're doing like the digital release, where if you want to use the app, if you want to see the rules, you have to use the app and buy the book and then unlock it separately. And we've talked about wanting to have a digital version of the book. But one of the other things we've said in the past is if an edition changes and you don't like it, you are always welcome to play with your old books. Now with 40K, I tend to purge my older books because they take up a lot of space. I only have so much space. But my concern is if they're willing to take away entire armies and they're willing to take away entire sections of armies that people have paid money for and have spent the time to build and paint so they can play with them, with the way they currently do digital rules, being that you can only access them digitally through their app rather than as a PDF that you can download separately and consume any way you want. My concern is if we do let them start doing digital rules the way that we've been talking about it, I don't know if I trust them to allow any sort of legacy access to them. I mean, we already have the problem of Warhammer Legends. I mean, fortunately, those are available as PDF. But that's about it. And no, again, you can't use them in the app in any way. And when Age of Sigmar's new app comes out, because you know they're going to scrap the old one and put a new one out there.
It's going to be paywalled.
It will be paywalled. And I have a feeling that they will probably retire the you get to see all the data sheets for free as they roll out Battle Tomes. And suddenly it's like you're going to lose access to rules that you had access to unless you pay up for our book.
What I really wish GW does, like, I love the idea of Legends. I think Legends is good. I think being able to put updates for models that are out there, you know, that they're not supporting actively, that's good. You know, it's not ideal, but I like that. What I really wish they would do is, especially since it's not like the current edition of the game anymore, make those rules available. Maybe make them available through Warhammer Plus. Put Legends rules out for every model you've ever done, you know? Like, let's put all the stuff, like, yeah, give me freaking 10th edition Legends rules for Doom Rider. Who cares? Like, yeah, it doesn't have to be balanced. Just let me, you know, but like, they need to be more open about that stuff if we want them to move to a digital model and like preserve access to that stuff. Because this stuff is like, I know it's not like actually important, but like there is history involved. There's a lot of people that, you know, that are spend a lot of time focusing on the stuff, and it's, you know, important to keep track and, you know, history of this stuff. So yeah, they need to make sure that access to the older editions, the older stuff, is also available. They have options to do it. Like, if they wanted to dedicate it, they could easily put it, you know, put old rule sets on Warhammer Plus, like they do the old White Dwarfs. It's all out there. They could do it digital and do it responsibly. But yeah, I don't really trust them right now to do that.
And I think that's the biggest thing that bothers me. And like, they've got like the Warhammer, well, like the Warhammer Vault is also not a great way to access these rules, because like, yes, you can sign in and view them all, but like the format is like, it's extremely high res scans, but it's very, like, it's very difficult to use outside of their app. And again, it's like, I don't necessarily want to be tied to their app, because that's not a great way for preservation either. Because then if that app goes away, or if they just decide one day, yeah, we're going to cancel the Warhammer Vault, it's tough. Now, I do think it would be awesome if they did things like, hey, you know what? We're going to release all the first edition or second edition, like Age of Sigmar stuff, for free. You know, it's like, we're on fourth edition now. That stuff's all out of date. It doesn't, you know, if you want to play it at this point, it's several years old. Go for it. Same thing, like, they've been releasing some of the old, like, hey, the Traitor Legion supplement is on the Warhammer Vault. I wonder how right. much access.
Yeah.
I wonder if they actually have the rules in there, or if it's just the fluff sections.
I think it's just the fluff sections.
Yeah, it's just the lore. Yeah, it's just the lore. And it is technically in PDF, but it's a weird embedded PDF that you can't access.
Right.
So it is just the, you know, it's just the lore section of the book. But it's like, I think that is the biggest damage of all of this, is that with this huge culling of models that are relatively recent, have been supported very recently, because I'm going to include the Beast of Chaos, even though a lot of those models are ancient, they got a new book and a new starter box and a new model as recently as a year ago. So the biggest damage is trust. There's going to be plenty of people who are absolutely fine with this. There's a lot of people who are absolutely fine with the Stormcast Eternal line getting cut down a bit. And that, from a game balance and a store shelf space issue, it's probably not a bad thing. A Mediocre Hobby did a video. He actually used to work at, I think, for a GW store in Ireland, and said that, yeah, there's good reasons for this. Like, this kind of stuff, It needs to be done from time to time. So there's definitely pluses to doing this. And I don't think any of this is done with a sense of malice. I think let's be very clear on that. I don't think there's anything here. I don't think it's an intentional, like, turn and burn move. I don't think it's intentionally to screw people over. I think it's being done with the sense of what is the best move for us as a company? What can we continue to produce and support? How much can we actually have on store shelves? And where do these models get, like, where are we going to get the best bang for our buck producing these models? And that's like where the Beast of Chaos thing comes in. It's like, yeah, we're better off if we move them over here where we think they'll be more of a focus. I understand all that from, like, from a purely pragmatic business sense, yes, all of this makes sense. But from a customer relation standpoint, this hurts badly. So if you are an Age of Sigmar player and you are looking at this and like feeling kind of hand shy, I don't blame you. Because half of my Stormcast Eternal army is going to expire in a year because a lot of my stuff is from the Soul Wars box, and I bought more stuff beyond that, like characters and extra models and kit. Like, I have a couple of like the non-easy build Sequitur boxes. I've got a couple of them that I still haven't even built yet because I had enough stuff from the third edition that I could kind of fill in the rest. But it's like I was actually working on a list that was like all Sacrosanct Chamber. And I still can, but it depends on how long people would be willing to play with it and how long before it becomes so far out of date that it's even as Legends that it's practically unusable. So, and that it'll be Legends for this edition in 3 years when 5th edition Age of Sigmar comes out. Are they going to continue? Is there going to be a Sacrosanct Legends document or Beasts of Chaos Legends document? No, of course not. Why would you?
Yeah, because there were a lot of models that didn't make the jump to Legends, you know, in 10th edition. So yeah, very frustrating.
Yeah, so GW burned a lot of trust with people with this one. And, I mean, to their credit, they're giving people advance warning, and I think having them officially supported for another year is. Like that is a strong move to not cut people out entirely. So I do think we need to give them credit for that. They didn't have to. They could have just said, yeah, these are getting moved into Legends as soon as 4th edition drops. And instead they're like, no, we're going to support them for another year. You deserve that much. Hey, you deserve a lot more than that. But at least, you know, I think that's about as close as the business is going to allow them to meeting things halfway. It's a bummer. It's not a great move. And like with the 40K thing, it's like, I wonder how long it's going to be until something like this hits 40K. Like, will we see with 11th edition a purge of particular armies or not? We are seeing a potential culling of Emperor's Children from the Chaos Space Marines Codex. Hopefully that's because they're going to be in a new book. But you know, we had Khorne Demonkin and then we didn't. I've heard rumors, and it may just be wishlisting more than anything else, that maybe they'll go back to that model and not have a separate Chaos Demons Codex. I don't know, but I was like going back to a kind of the same model that they have for Age of Sigmar, where it's like your mortals and your demons are all lumped together based on God. And like, maybe that's a thing they're going to do, but we don't know. And then maybe Bellicor ends up in the Chaos Space Marine book instead of in the Chaos Demons book. Don't know. Could happen. Stranger things have. But yeah, it's just like, I don't know who to trust on. So, like, we have the Night Lords just went up for pre-order yesterday. They're already gone, by the way. That apparently disappeared even with queues, that was apparently gone within less than an hour. And of course, all of this is compounded by the production issues that GW is having, which we've seen some other information and suggestions on that maybe they are trying to spin up additional production lines in other places and trying to address those bottlenecks. But man, all of this, it doesn't. Like, you keep rolling out all this new stuff and retiring old things and encouraging people to replace their old things with new things, but they can't get the new things.
Yeah. Yeah, they have to. They definitely have to sort this out because it's. It has the potential to long term definitely damage a lot. So
yeah. So watch this space. Watch, you know, keep an eye on what happens in the future. And, you know, maybe there needs to be more of a push by the community to maybe start embracing more of the legend stuff and embracing more casual play so that those models can be used. Hopefully the Age of Sigmar community will jump on that so that these players don't feel just abandoned by their game. So we'll see what happens. Talk about a down note before we get into an orc discussion. But
yay.
So that wraps up that news and the impacts on how we feel, like where we feel like this impacts players and customers' relationships with GW. We're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we get back, we will talk about the new Orcs Codex. But before we do, I do want to tell you that if you want to talk with us, you can talk with us on Discord. And the way to access our Discord is to join our Patreon. We are at patreon.com/preferredenemies. And if you join us there, it's basically an online tip jar. The minimum level is $1 a month. We don't have any higher tiers. We don't lock any of our shows behind a paywall. But we do lock access to our Discord because we want our Discord to be for the people who want to be part of our community. And we've got some cool people hanging out there and showing off some awesome models, having great conversations. So we would encourage you to join us for as little as $1 a month. And for supporting us, that helps us pay for our hosting and our recording services and replacing microphones. And we really do appreciate all the support that you, the subscribers, give to us. So if you want to be a supporter on Patreon, go to patreon.com/preferredenemies. We would love to see you on our Discord and welcome you to the Preferred Frenemies community. So we will be right back after a word from our sponsors, and we will be talking about the Orc Codex. See you in a bit.
Miniatures. We build them, we paint them, we love them.
That's why we also want to get them to the battle and back again safely.
And that's where Kara Multicase comes in. They offer a complete model storage and transport system.
They offer a wide selection of core trays for standard size miniatures, as well as custom cut trays for specific models.
KR's trays are made of a soft foam, available in a variety of colors that won't scratch or snag your models.
And to protect the foam, the trays are carried in easily stackable, swappable cardboard cases.
They also offer a full range of Kaiser bags, backpacks, and aluminum cases for transporting your KR cases.
You can even choose from pre-built tray selections to suit your army, or use the autofill app to find just the right trays for your particular force.
Whatever your game, 40K, X-Wing, Worm Hordes, or Historicals, KR Multicase has the cases to fit your needs.
You can find out more at krmulticase.com.
KR Multicase, soft foam for your figures, hard cases for the soft foam.
Are you tired of playing on a boring battlefield? Do you want to step up the quality of your gaming table and make your battle look real?
Then you need to check out the battle mats from GameMat. Their professionally designed rubber-based mats are just what your gaming table needs.
Available in a variety of styles, with everything from rolling grasslands to urban war zones, winter wastelands to alien deserts, there's a GameMat mat to fit any kind of terrain.
Their mats are padded, anti-slip, waterproof, and when you're done rolling dice and battling on your mat, just roll it up and stick it in the convenient carrying bag for easy transport and storage.
And if you don't have a gaming table, they've got you covered with their folding G-board portable gaming area and their line of pre-painted resin terrain.
If you're ready to upgrade your gaming table, head over to www.gamemat.eu and find the gaming mat that's right for you.
Game Mat, giving your armies the battlefield they deserve.
And we're back. And normally this would be the time where you talk about our main topic, but there's a couple things I did want to hit beforehand. First off, there was something you noticed on the Warhammer community website, Kevin.
Yeah. So they always put up the community paints articles whenever a new, you know, new box comes out. So and they originally had just kind of like, here's community painted
models, and they didn't list anything. They just had these cool pictures of models. They've gotten better over the years of like adding names and stuff, but on the Kill Team Nightmare page, I did notice that they're not only listing the artist, but also their Instagram handle, so you can follow them and like find them on Instagram or Twitter or wherever else they're at, which I think is a huge, huge deal, because it actually, like, you know, I don't necessarily like the whole, like, you know, paid and exposure stuff idea, but like crediting people for the work they've done and like getting them out there like helps, because some of these people are really cool and have a lot of really cool models that they've painted that it's nice to be able to see. So good on GW for posting the links and making it easier to follow these artists.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting these boxes in front of people who have a chance to really do something cool with them, and not only, you know, because obviously it helps GW with promotion, but also giving them front and center coverage and saying like, hey, this is who they are, this is where you can find them and see the rest of their stuff. There's a reason we gave them this stuff to look at, you know, and to paint ahead of time. So that, you know, that is really cool. I will say they did send us the Nightmare box. I am hip deep in Tyranids right now, so I have not been able to even look at the Night Lord's sprues, but we did send the Mandrake sprues off to Dennis, and he was pretty happy with them. He said they look like something out of a horror movie, but the models look great. So much detail in plastic. Yeah, he was really impressed with the Mandrake models. So again, thank you, GW, for sending us a copy of that to take a look at the models. But yeah, there's some fantastic paint jobs, and good on GW for letting people know exactly where they can find them. And the other thing is, a lot of these are not names I would have necessarily known before. Like, they didn't do the normal ship this out to like the same five huge painters. It was cool to see some other painters and artists getting attention. So good on GW for also widening the community that they're showing. So pretty happy with that. And the other thing is, we've got Midwest Conquest coming up in just about a month. In fact, it'll be a month from when this episode drops.
Yeah. So there are still tickets available. There are tickets available for the Warhammer GT, for the narrative that Dennis and I will be running. There's an Age of Sigmar tournament. There is a Bolt Action tournament. We've got our smaller events like Beer Hammer, the Night Joust after the main events. We will have vendors there. It's a lot of fun. The link for the hotel is available. It is May 10th through 12th in Independence, Missouri at the Stony Creek Hotel. Mother's Day weekend, right?
Yes, Mother's Day weekend.
Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Mother's Day weekend. I'm always used to like, what's Memorial Day weekend? But it's not this year. So Mother's Day weekend, yeah. MidwestConquest.com to sign up. We hope to see you there. We have enough people signed up that we're going to run all the events that are on the schedule. Like, we've got, you know, the minimums hit. So we're just looking for more people to come and fill out, throw some dice and have fun.
Yep. Room block is available. So if you're looking for a place to stay, the way to reserve your room at the Stony Creek Hotel, which is where the event is held, is available on the website. If you just go to the location section of the website, there's a link to get your room from the room block. So MidwestConquest.com has all the information you need to find those events and get registered ASAP. All right. So now it's time to talk about something green and mean. It's time to talk about the Orc Codex. If you are completely unfamiliar with orcs, you are probably in the wrong place. But if you are not familiar with 40K's take on orcs, this is definitely one of the artifacts of Warhammer Fantasy, but in space. And over the years, they have made it very much its own thing. The orcs have been one of the antagonists since Warhammer 40K became a thing. And they are a very simple, straightforward race. They want to fight. That's all they want. They want to fight and then fight some more. And if when they're done fighting, they want to have another bigger fight.
Biggest is best.
Biggest is best. I
80s British soccer hooligans.
yes, 80s British soccer hooligan gorillas made of fungus. The fungal part has been played up more or less in different versions of the codex. This one kind of leans into it a little bit. They do mention that anywhere that orcs show up, there's odd fungi tend to pop up, and they talked about the idea that when orcs die, they may give off spores that just grow into more orcs. So orcs reproduce by getting into fights and getting killed. So good luck clearing out an infestation. They're like roaches that want a fist fight. But basically, they exist only to fight, and they have all the history of the orc has been examined and re-examined a lot over the years, but there's also some very strong suggestions that they are an engineered race because they tend to, like, first off, when they fight and win, they get bigger and they are just kind of drawn by instinct to congregate around the biggest guy and then challenge that biggest guy, and he'll fight, you know, and he'll defend his position, and the ones who he beats tend to be still bigger than all the other ones below them, so they just kind of form a natural hierarchy. So they're just used to going whoever is biggest, he's the guy in charge. They don't have scientists and researchers in a way that we would understand it. They just seem to know certain ones of them, not all of them, but certain ones just seem to know how to do things and just get obsessed with doing those things.
Yeah, how to scrap stuff together and voila, now we have a spaceship. Or I threw this stuff together and now it's a gun that shoots grots at people.
Yeah, it's like they don't, there's no schooling, there's no education. Like, they're doctors, they're pain boys, know just how to work on orc bodies. They just know.
It's heavily, you know, implied that a lot of their stuff only works because they think it works.
Right.
That's my favorite bit. That it's just collective belief. Which is hilarious because in other elements of 40K, they've started to kind of work that in, that like, oh yeah, the Sisters of Battle's miracles work because of collective belief, and like collective worship of chaos is what creates demons. Like, it actually is one of those things where like it feels like a goofy one-off that like, oh yeah, things go faster because orcs believe that red things go faster, but like that's kind of how the universe works. And it's, I like that they're tying that in like to the larger fabric of the world.
Mm-hmm. The whole collective power, and that pulls into the power of the wall. When you get enough orcs together in one place, it just kind of builds on itself. And then you get psychic orcs that get empowered by that as well. The weird boys and were boys. And when you get enough orcs together, they just end up going on about the closest equivalent they would have to a crusade, which is known as a war. And they'll just start going for anything that looks like it's going to make a big enough fight, and then just go after the next thing and the next thing until they get stuck in, and then they fight, and then some of them will run away, because if you run away, that means you can fight again another day, literally. They do have a pair of gods, although they might be the same god. It is unknown, and it's changed back and forth several times, but there's Gork and Mork. Mork is cunning but brutal, and Gork is brutal but cunning. Orcs do respect a good cunning plan, as long as the end of that plan involves them putting their fist through somebody's face. They can be sneaky gits when they want.
Because that just gets them to a fight.
Yeah, exactly. Orcs can make plans, but generally that plan is just run at them with the most things, the biggest, loudest things. Also, when we talk about orc belief in their technology, not only does it actually make their technology function, but it makes their technology function in ways that by all means shouldn't. Like the fact that putting red paint on something actually does make it go faster. Orcs honestly believe that the color red makes things go faster, so they will paint their vehicles red, and it seems to work. Now, whether that's because the ones that are drawn towards making things faster have an instinctual love of the color red that was crafted into them, we don't know. No one knows. You can't really ask an orc. They don't know. They do have what little oral history they have implies that there was a cast called the Brain Boys, but they're all gone now. So somebody, it is strongly suggested someone did this. And there has been, like, in the past, theories that they were crafted as a weaponized race during the war in heaven, which would have been the Old Ones versus the Satan and the Necrons. So there was, it's not in the current codex, but there has been previous material about a precursor race called the Krork, which may have been, the orcs may be what's left of that race. And I say what's left, they're not a dying race by any means. You can't kill them long enough.
But they're just far enough removed from what they were.
Yes, they definitely have degraded somewhat. We'll say that. And actually, if you look at there was a series that they did called The Beast Arises. Yes, The Beast Arises is a series of novels set in like the 32nd millennium. So this is like 2000, you know, 1500 to 2000 years after the Horus Heresy. The forces of chaos have retreated entirely to the Eye of Terror, and they're not really a thing. The Imperium is in a process of rebuilding. They've been at peace, and then an orc war appears with, like, led by a creature called the Beast, which is basically a dreadnought sized orc who's also intelligent. So yeah, the orcs in the Imperium have been tightly connected lore wise for basically an entirety of their history. And in fact, the planet where Horus was named Warmaster was Olinor. And the orcs were the race they defeated on Olinor, which led to the celebration, which led to Horus being named Warmaster. And Olinor is also known as Armageddon because it's since been exterminated. And so, yeah, as long as there's been an Imperium, orcs have been a problem to deal with. So yeah, they are a long-standing antagonist. The Imperium has dealt with them for many centuries, many millennia. And so I don't expect, unlike other factions which have been removed from their games, I don't see the orcs going away from 40K anytime soon.
Yeah.
No, I think that orcs are actually as iconic to 40K as, like, Space Marines, because they're just, like, they're a very unique, like, 40K GW thing. Like, their presentation, like, orcs are not, you know, a wholly unique concept, but the 40K, like, presentation of orcs is very unique. And I think it's one of the larger iconic things about it.
Oh, yeah, I don't see them getting rid of that. They're present in so much of the extended 40K media, like video games, novels, comics, stuff like that. Like, orcs are so present. And they're, like you said, they're a very distinct take on orcs that, yeah, I don't see them ever going away. So let's get into the rules on how orcs play. And in this one, let's see, they did rename the detachment from the index. It used to be the Wah Horde. It is now the War Horde, but functionally the same. But their army rule is still named Wah, and is pretty much the same as it was in the index, but it is key to understanding how to play orcs. So the Wah rule basically says, if your army is orcs, once per battle at the start of the battle round, you can call a Wah. If you do until the start of the next battle round, the Wah is active for your army, and units from your army can declare a charge in the turn in which they advanced. They gain +1 strength and attacks for any melee weapons equipped by them, and they gain a 5+ invulnerable save, which is good because orcs have the worst armor.
Yep.
And orcs, again, you know, charging after advancing very much in orky fashion because they want to get stuck in. This is a close combat army that nonetheless does have a fair amount of shooting. It's not good shooting, but it's a lot of shooting.
Quantity over quality, though. Yeah.
Yeah, that I think, like, if you wanted to sum orcs up in three words, that would be it. Quantity over quality.
Yep.
Although there are a few quality orcs. That's where war bosses come in. That's because they're the biggest, they're the best. But we got six detachments or 1.5 tau codexes. No, I'm not letting that go. I'm bitter. The tau codex is now my unit of measurement for how many options a codex has. So we get the default detachment, the one that was in the index, the one that you are most likely to have encountered if you have played with orcs up until now. And their ability is get stuck in melee weapons equipped by orc models from your army have sustained hits one, which means you're just gonna get more hits in. Orcs tend to have decent melee abilities. But being able to get crits and get a few extra hits in there never hurts. Now, this does only affect the melee weapons, but that's how a lot of your damage is going to be done anyway. And honestly, I don't think this actually changed too much. Like the enhancements look to be pretty much the same.
The enhancements are pretty much the same. The mob rule is different.
No, mob rule is different. Because mob rule in the index said, okay, so basically traditionally orcs have, like, an individual orc has pretty crap morale. They do not want to stick around in a fight if they're by themselves. But if there's a whole bunch of them, then again, that whole collective wall energy keeps them together. And the mob rule has been a different thing in every single edition. It's always been one of the things they've tried to get right. And in this, in the index, it was basically you had a unit that was a battle shot, or like you had an orc unit that had at least 10 models, wasn't below half strength, and you could select an orc infantry unit within 6 inches, and that orc infantry could still be targeted for stratagems even though they were battle shocked. Now it just says they're no longer considered battle shocked, which is big because that means their OC doesn't drop to zero.
Yes. It is. Yes, it's better. It is better. Like, that is a big change. But, like, it still functions very similarly.
Yeah.
But better.
Definitely better. Other strats they have Kareen, which is also a classic orc vehicle thing, because orc vehicles are, as we mentioned, just kind of slapped together out of parts and shouldn't work. In the past, it was like when an orc vehicle was destroyed, it would move in a random direction and then explode. Well, now, because we've got the deadly demise rule for our explosions, Kareen lets you basically, when a vehicle, orc vehicle, is destroyed and you rolled the 6 for deadly demise, you actually get to move it and let anybody on board get off after the move. And then so you can basically target where that thing's going to explode. The one downside here is you still have to have rolled a 6 for it to explode. If you could make it explode, it would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's true. But it's not a case of, like, you have to spend the CP and then roll a 6. Like, you have to have rolled a 6 for this to be a legal target for you to... Like, you already have rolled the 6 when you're deciding to use this. The way
that's
I
true.
Read it.
That's true.
You've already rolled that 6 for this stratagem.
Yeah, it is something you target a vehicle where you've already rolled the 6. So this is one of those, you can't really plan on it, but it's a nice to have in your pocket type thing.
Right, yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, I don't think the strats change. You have orcs is never beaten, which lets them fight on death. Without having to roll for it, they just fight on death, which is also why it's 2 CP. Unbridled Carnage, which lets you crit on 5s, which makes those sustained hits go off very easily. And then Arda's Nails lets you choose a non-vehicle, non-grot, non-monster unit, and any incoming wound or anybody who tries to wound you is wounding at minus one. Keeping your stuff alive, getting stuck in. You've got Here We Go for getting better advance and charge.
Yeah. Like, all aside from Kareen, which is cool, but very, very situational, like, all of the stratagems are just really good, solid, basic, like, you should use these when the time is right for these stratagems. Right.
Yeah. There's, like you said, Kareen's situational, but yeah, there's not a stinker in the bunch. These are all good, and they all lean very much into how orcs are going to play. So they're all great. Not a bad one. This is a good. So now we get into the new detachments. Our second detachment is the Big Hunt, and this is all Beast Snaggas all the time, which is the newest set of orc models that were released last edition, if I remember right. Which is your Beast Snagga boys and your bosses on squigs and stuff like that. So your detachment here is the hunt is on. You pick something to kill and you're going to take it, go for it. So at the start of your command phase, select one monster vehicle or warlord unit from your opponent's army. If your opponent does not have any of these on the battlefield or embarked with a transport that is on the battlefield, you can select a character from your opponent's army instead. So you should almost always have something you can target with it. Until the start of your next command phase, that enemy unit is your prey. You reroll charge rolls when one of your Beast Snaggy units is declaring a charge against it, and your AP goes up by one against it. So this is pick a thing that is important and go kill it.
Yep. Yeah, if you get down to where you don't have anything to pick for this, like, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, your opponent's probably in like, way more trouble than...
Right.
Like, you don't need to worry about not being able to pick. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So your enhancements here, you've got Glory Hog. This one is only for a beast boss on Squigasaur, but it gives him and his unit Scouts 9 inches, which... Extra 9 inches of getting closer to the enemy. Always, you know, orcs are always going to love that. Scrag every stash. Beast Snagga model only. At the end of your command phase, if the bear is within range of an objective marker you control, it basically makes the boss sticky. Proper killy. Add one of the damage characteristic of melee weapons equipped by the bearer. Extra damage. Not a bad thing. And then Surly as a Squiggoth. For beast bosses on Squigasaur only, while the bear is leading a unit, which is always going to be Squig Boys or Squig Riders, each time an attack targets that unit, if the strength characteristic is greater than their toughness, subtract one from the wound roll. So it protects them against big weapons, but not small arms fire. Considering that those are going to be your bigger things you're going to be throwing at people in this army, that's not a bad thing to have.
It's
not the strongest ability.
Yeah, and if you might notice, then this gets into, like, a change that has been on one of the data cards. Beast boss on Squigasaur, now a leader.
Yep.
Which
wasn't a leader before, is now.
Yep, which is a pretty significant change.
Yeah. Now, I think I am going to mention a datasheet change here. In trade-off, they took down his toughness and wounds by one, so he's a little less tough on his own, but he doesn't need to be now.
He's actually... right, exactly. Yeah, he actually lost, like, 2 toughness. They used to be, like, tough 10. Mm-hmm.
T8 and 8 wounds now instead of T10, 9 wounds.
Yep.
But considering you're going to take a bodyguard with him, he'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, you were taking that unit anyway when you, like, if you're running Beast Boss on Squigasaur, you probably had Squig Hog Boys anyway. So, like, now you're just throwing them together, and it's right. All fine.
And if you're taking that, you're probably taking this detachment, too, because you're going to be leaning into that heavily points-wise. So, yeah. For your strats, you've got Drag It Down, which battle tactic. Always good to know which ones are your battle tactics. During the fight phase, you pick a Beast Snag army that hasn't fought yet. Until the end of the phase, they have sustained hits one, and they crit on five up, so they basically get the unbridled carnage from the Warhorde. So, always nice.
Right. Well, you have to be going against your prey.
Oh, yes. It for the critical hits on fives. They still get the sustained hits one, but they'll crit on fives if they're going after prey. Yeah. Right. I do need to remember to mark that, like, which ones trigger off of prey. Unstoppable Momentum, a strategic ploy for 1 CP. You, in your charge phase, just after a Beast Snag mounted unit from your army ends a charge move, you select an enemy unit within engagement range of your unit. You roll a d6 for each model in your unit. For 4 up, they suffer a mortal wound. If the enemy unit is your prey, roll 3 additional d6. Stuff like Tank Shock and abilities like this are always fantastic. Anything you can do to have a 50-50 chance of doing mortal wounds, very solid. That one's even bigger. In your charge phase, you pick a Beast Snag unit from your army. Until the end of this phase, your unit can charge after advancing or falling back as long as one of the targets of the charge is their prey. Where'd you think you're going? In your opponent's movement phase, just after an enemy unit ends a fallback move, you get to make a normal move within 6 inches to get right back in their faces. That one's fantastic. Because there's not a roll-off, there's not a thing where they might get away.
Well, this does say make a normal move, and it doesn't specify that you can get back into engagement range. But you're still chasing
after them. That's true. You're still chasing after them, but most, unless it's if it's an infantry unit, it probably won't be able to fall back more than 6 inches anyway. So, and like you said, it is a normal move, so you'd be able to get to an inch of them. But still, that's...
Yeah, it makes it so that you're still going to be able to get back in and charge them again.
Right. Yeah. That's practically a guaranteed charge at that point. So yeah, that's good. And that doesn't cover both infantry and mounted units. So there's a lot of stuff that can make use of that. So that's good. It's not just limited to just the mounted. Stalking Tactics, another battle tactic. In your opponent's shooting phase, just after an enemy unit has selected its targets, if it was a Beast Snag infantry or mounted unit, you have cover, and if they're infantry, they also have stealth. And then Instinctive Hunters, at the end of your opponent's fight phase, choose a Beast Snag unit from your army not within engagement range and put it into reserves so it'll be able to come off of another table edge the next turn. Also not bad, depending on what turn it is and where you can come out. That could be very, very useful. Next up, Cult of Speed. This is if you want to go faster, this is the one to go. Their detachment rules, Adrenaline Junkies, Speed Freaks units from your army are eligible to shoot in a turn in which they advanced or fell back. And pretty much Speed Freaks are going to be anything on a bike or a buggy. That also does include the flyers for what it matters, but primarily the buggies, the bikes, and defcoptas, but not trucks and battle wagons. So this will not will not impact your transports in any way. And your characters, your enhancements are primarily, two of them are going to be for the Death Kill a War Trike specifically, which is the effectively war boss on bike, and then two of them are really only going to be one of them is definitely for infantry and wants you to be in a transport, and then the other one works even if you're also on a transport. So they've got a couple options for guys on foot, which is good.
Yeah, they've got an option for rolling to maybe get an additional CP, which is nice.
Yeah. That's speed makes right if you're within 9 inches of one or more enemy units, or if your transport you're on is within 9 inches. So again, it's nice that it works with a transport. You've got a chance to get a CP on a 3 up, which is a really good chance. Squig hide tires for the war trike. You can consolidate 6 inches instead of 3. Very good for them. Waz Blasta in your shooting phase. After you've shot, if you're not within engagement range, you can make a normal move up to 6 inches. You just can't choose to charge after that. And then faster than use for an orc infantry model only. Every time they disembark from a transport, after the transport has made a normal move, they can still charge. Basically, gives whatever vehicle they're on an assault ramp. So, also really good. And while their detachment ability does not interact with trucks, a couple of their stratagems do. So you got speediest freaks, strategic ploy in your opponent's shooting phase or the fight phase, just after an enemy unit has selected its targets. You can choose a speed freak or truck unit that was the target of one of the attacks, and they gain a 5+ in vulnerable. If they're a vehicle unit with an unmodified toughness of 8 or less, they get a 4+ in vulnerable instead. So, kind of basically a jink, better invuln saves. Now, I will say I think all of the vehicles in this, and this was unchanged from the index, have a 6+ invulnerable anyway to represent. That was like the old ramshackle ability. So it's like there's always a chance when you shoot at an orc vehicle that you're going to hit something that isn't load bearing. And so every vehicle has a 6+ invulnerable. Being able to get that to a 5 or a 4, especially for like bikes and things like that. Well, bikes, I think, would be mounted, but I think the buggies, I don't think they are. The buggies are T7, so yeah, this would give the buggies a 4+ invulnerable. So yeah, that is actually quite good for them. Squig Flingin, after in your movement phase, just after a Speed Freaks or Truck ended a normal advance or fallback move, you select an enemy unit within 9 inches, and the enemy must make a battle shock test with -1 on the roll, just because you're busy throwing squigs at people as you drive by. Daka Storm, in your shooting phase, your ranged weapons, Speed Freaks unit gets sustained hits 1 on all their weapons. If they're targeting a unit within 9 inches, they get sustained hits 2. But you can't target them with both this and Blitz of Fire, the next stratagem in the same phase. Blitz of Fire gives your weapons lethal hits, and if you're if the target's within 9 inches, then they crit on 5s instead of 6s. So that's why they're like, yeah, no, we don't want to give these things sustain hits to crit on 5s and lethal at the same time. That would be a bad idea. We're not going to allow that.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, you can choose to shoot lots or shoot strong.
And the thing is, critting on 5s is a big deal because that's your ballistic skill in most cases. So if you're critting on 5s, all your hits are crits. We've got Full Throttle. During your charge phase, just after your Speed Freaks ends a charge move until the end of the turn, they are +1 to wound with their melee attacks. And then more gets over here. When your opponent has ended a normal advance or fallback move, you can make a normal move of up to 6 inches as long as you're within 9 inches of the enemy unit and not within engagement range. So again, just keeping pressing the attack. Free mobility, free, you pay CP, but extra mobility is always good, and especially in a Cult of Speed army. This is going to be like just pushing enemies around the table effectively.
Yeah. This one's pretty nice. Like the Full Throttle is probably about the only one that I'm not big on, because like a Cult of Speed army is probably going to tend to favor shooting a lot more than melee. Like they can do melee and they're not bad at it, but they just don't have the large number of attacks that the other builds of orcs do. So their melee will tend to just be to like clean up what's left over from after them shooting.
Let's see. Next up, the Dread Mob. This is a detachment that is a fan favorite. There have been a number of iterations of this throughout the years, and basically the idea of just running all the Death Dreads and Killicans that you can, and just a wall of clanky death metal coming at your opponent.
I like this one. You could use this if you wanted to play like that all Gretchen kind of army.
Yeah, because Grot's vehicle is one of the things that this keys off of.
Yes. And just in general, Gretchen get the battle line keyword. So, like, even if you aren't running necessarily, like, a whole bunch of Death Dreads and Killicans, you could still probably use this to do a, like, Zagrod, like, Super Grots kind of thing.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So, our detachment rule is try dat button. Because the mechs involved in making this stuff are always willing to come up with a bunch of wild designs. And so every time a mech, Orcs Walker, or Grot's vehicle unit from your army is selected to shoot or fight, roll a d6. Until the end of the phase, weapons equipped by models in the unit have the corresponding ability. One to two gives you sustained hits one. Three to four gives you lethal hits. And five to six improves AP by two on critical wounds. Alternately, you can choose to select one of those abilities instead of rolling, but if you do, the weapons become hazardous. So you can either let it go to fate entirely, or you can pick the thing you want, knowing that you might cause the vehicle to blow up by overusing it.
As I was reading this, I was like, I don't know if I like this that much, because like when you're rolling a D6 randomly, like the difference between sustained hits one and lethal hits and like better armor penetration, like those are going to be like useful in like different situations. But then when I got to like the ability to like just pick and then also get hazardous, I'm like, okay, yeah, that works.
Yeah. And also, I do like the fact that if a weapon ever has hazardous from more than one source, it is now twice as hazardous and will fail on a two instead of just a one.
Yeah.
So nice touch there. And as you pointed out, Gretchen, our battle line here, which is good because those are you're going to be spending your points on the big clanky things and not so much on the cheap little guys that'll be holding objectives for you.
Right. So, yeah. Or like this would be funny to like. I kind of want to make a Magus XLR like Death Dread now.
Yes, we've got enhancements. All of these enhancements are for mechs, but fortunately, you have several mechs to choose from, so you've got some options. You've got Smoky Gubbins. The models in the Bears unit have stealth. The super glowy thing. In your command phase, you select an enemy within 18 inches and visible to the bear, then roll a d6 on a 1 to 2. The enemy unit must take a battle shock test. On a 3 to 4, they suffer d3 mortal wounds, and on a 5 to 6, until the start of your next command phase, they are subtract 1 from all their hit rolls. And that is not a once per game thing. That is just every turn.
Yeah, that one's a weird... the random's kind of cool. Like they'll be useful in different situations, and whether like your random thing really has an impact, who knows, but you know, on one of those turns it'll probably make a difference.
Right. And to put this in perspective, as far as what mechs and the units they can join, because this would include mechs and big mechs. You've got the big mech in mega armor. He can only join mega knobs. But your big mechs and mechs can join boys, ludas, mecha guns, which are also grot vehicles. So that's important. And so they can join those. They can join boys. They can join ludas. Regular mechs can join tank bustas. So there are things that they can join. Being able to join mech guns, I think, is a very good choice for this. Especially if you're going to lean into the grot vehicle thing. Press it fasta, mech model only, again. Each time the bear's unit is selected to shoot, when rolling to determine which ability the unit's weapons gain from the tri-dat button, roll an additional d6. Until the end of the phase, ranged weapons get both abilities. But if you roll a duplicate, you don't get an additional effect. So that would also reduce the ability of randomness. Just get all of it, or most of it. And then get finder goggles. Ranged weapons equipped by models in this bear's unit have ignores cover. So yeah, all of those I would put on a mech joining a unit of mech guns, because they're like, for this particular, like, you could put them in like Ludas, or like, they wouldn't be bad in Ludas either if you chose those, but if you really wanted to lean into what the Dreb mob is all about, I would go with mech guns. Let's see, Clank and Claws, Battle Tactic. During the fight phase, you select an Orc's Walker army. Every time you use the stratagem, you can choose to push it. Until the end of the phase, add 2 to the strength characteristic of melee weapons equipped by models in the unit, and if you chose to push it. So when you use the stratagem, you can choose to push it. They will always get 2 strength. If you choose to push it, they can also get 1 damage, but the weapons also become hazardous. And if you chose which of the special abilities, they'll become double hazardous, so hilarity ensues. Super-fueled boiler, whenever one of your Orc Walker models choose to advance, they can reroll advance rolls, and their ranged weapons gain assault, so they can shoot in advance. So, very good. Bigger shells for bigger gits. When one of your mech, Orc Walker, or Grot vehicle units have not been selected to shoot, shoots. When you use the stratagem, you can choose to push it. You add 1 to the wound roll against monsters or vehicles. And if you choose to push it, you add 1 to the damage, and the weapons become hazardous again. Having the ability to push these really leans into the flavor of this one. This one just seems, it's like such a fun detachment to play. Daka Daka Daka, classic orc name there. Another battle tactic, and also bigger shells was a battle tactic as well. But Daka Daka Daka, you select an Orc Walker or Grot vehicle unit to shoot. You can choose to push it. You reroll hit rolls of 1, which is great for an army that needs as much accuracy as they can get. If you choose to push it, you can reroll the hit rolls and they gain it. That one's solid. That one's really good, especially because Grots, if I remember right, tend to hit on 4s instead of 5s.
Yes. Yes, generally, yes.
Yeah. And so, like, Killikans and the mech guns would have a better chance of, much better chance of hitting. Conniving Runts. Let's see. Your opponent's movement phase, just after an enemy unit ends a normal advance or fall back move, you choose a Gretchen unit within 9 inches of the enemy unit and not within engagement range. Roll a d6 on a 4+. The enemy unit suffers d3 plus 1 mortal wounds, and then you can make a normal move. So you're just near them, you can cause some mortal wounds, and then run away. I love it. And then finally, extra gubbins. When one of your opponents shoots at a Orc Walker or Grot vehicle, not including Titanic units, you subtract 1 from the damage characteristic of the attack. And yes, that is true. Orc Walkers would include Stompas, wouldn't they? Which, by the way, as of recording, the Sunday preview has dropped, confirming that, of course, as we have already mentioned, Orcs and Custodes are coming out next, or going up for order next week. And that includes the Orc Stompa Boys box. I'm just going to put this out here right now. The Stompa, the rules have not changed, and no one will still take one because they're still 800 points.
Yeah.
It's a shame because it's a cool looking model. And once upon a time, it was actually vaguely terrifying. And now it's just kind of there. All right. Next up, Green Tide. Let's see. This should be our 4. Yep. This is our fifth of 6 detachments. Green Tide, this is the one that I think you're going to see a lot of people trying.
This one, speed will definitely get some. Yeah, this one, I looked through and I'm like, this one is, it is very similar to the original, like, detachment, the index detachment. But, like, I think it's pretty solid. Like, I think it's almost even more so, like, kind of a all-around general, like, has some of the best, like, rules.
Yeah, I think this one is just, it is super solid, and with the change to boys, which I'll just go ahead and tell you what it is right now, orc boys, they used to have the ability to, like, if a war boss was leading them and they failed a battle shock test, if they're within range of an objective marker, you can destroy a model from a bodyguard model from the unit and reroll the battle shock test. Okay, fine. Now they just have sticky objectives. If boys control the objective, better. Then when they leave the objective, they still control. Yeah. Sticky objectives is so strong, and like that change both makes the Warhorde and the Green Tide very strong. But this one, this is the boys detachment. This is the one that leads into boys. Everything in here strat wise involves boys units. So it's like if you want to run the Green Tide, you know, the squads of boys, you know, boys before toys, like just boys, as far as the eye can see, and remember, boys are battle line. You can run them in units of up to 20, I believe. So, like, you're talking 120 boys on the table, and considering they're on 32 mil bases, they're going to take up a lot of real estate. Like, this is a very brutal board control detachment.
Yeah. Depending on how terrain is, if you're putting 120 boys on the board, like, you may even have to put one into reserve.
Yeah.
Just because you don't have the room to put them down.
Right. So, their detachment rule, mob mentality. Each time an attack targets a boy's unit from your army, models in that unit have a 5-up invulnerable save. So you don't need to call a wall. You always have a 5-up invuln. And in addition, each time an attack targets an orc unit from your army, if it contains 10 or more models, re-roll the saving throw of 1.
Oh, that beautiful word, re-roll. Oh, how I've missed you as an orc player.
Oh, yeah. And yes, they want you to run big units here. So, because like the enhancements, ferocious show-off, all of these are for orc infantry. So we're talking war bosses on, you know, on foot, or pain boys on foot. Or first to show off, orc infantry model only. Each time the bear fights while resolving those attacks, add 1 to the strength of the bear's melee weapons. If the bear's unit contains 10 or more models, add 3 to the strength instead.
Hit it hard.
Yeah.
Just hit it hard.
Yeah. And considering that a war boss can be equipped with a power claw, that takes that power claw from strength 10 to strength 13. Which is going to be wounding most things on threes, if not twos. So, yeah, yep. that's awesome. Brutal but cunning. If you're in your command phase, the bear's on the battlefield or is embarked within a transport, because trucks are still an option with this one, roll a d6, adding 2 to the result of the bear's unit contains 10 or more models. On a 5-up, you gain a CP.
Yeah, pretty good.
Bloodthirsty belligerence, orc infantry model only. While the bear is leading a unit, you can reroll advance rolls. While the unit contains 10 or more models, you can reroll charge rolls too. And then finally, raucous war caller. While the bear is leading a unit, that unit always counts as containing 10 or more models for the purposes of your detachment rule or any stratagems you use.
Yeah, this one, this detachment is set up, I think you always want to take that one.
Yeah.
Just always.
Well, and the thing is, like, Raucous Warcaller, it doesn't even say that the unit has to be a unit that could get to 10 models. Like, you could...
Right.
Yeah, you could, like, for example, you could have a war boss join a unit of 5 knobs, and they'll count as 10 all the time.
Yep.
No, that, yeah, I think that is an always take. I think Bloodthirsty Belligerence is damn near an always take. Like, that one is also, because rerolling charge rolls is huge for this army. The other two are nice. I definitely there's not a bad one here, but yeah, I agree with you. Raucous Warcaller is a must take. And so your strats, competitive streak, when one of your boys' units selected to fight, they can reroll wound rolls of one. If the unit contains 10 or more, reroll the wound roll. Again, that blessed word, reroll. Bulldozer brutality, you select a boys' unit that has not been selected to fight and is within engagement range of one or more enemy units until the end of the phase. Every time that unit is selected to fight, when determining which models in your unit are eligible to fight, any models in your unit within 3 inches of one or more enemy models are eligible to fight. And when resolving those attacks, such models can target one of those enemy units so is it within 3 inches of them and engagement range. So instead of being base to base or within an inch of a base to base unit, just everybody within 3 inches, which when you're talking mobs of 20 orcs, that will mean something. Bragan writes, select two boy units from your army that are within 6 inches of each other and tell the start of your next turn. While those two units are within 6 inches of each other, they both count as containing 10 or more models for detachment rule or any strats you use. Which is an interesting way to do something they used to do, which was mob up, where you could like combine two squads.
Right, exactly. I think that is a better way of doing it when, you know, you also have to consider like, you know, secondary objective things where it's like, well, you destroy a unit, but what happens if those units mob up and like combining units was like always ended up being like something that you thought was simple, but like the way it interacted with other rules always like made it a little confusing. So,
right.
I think that this is a good way to do it.
I agreed. Absolutely agreed. Come on, lads. Target a boys unit from your army in your command phase. Return D3 plus 2 destroyed models to the unit. Oh, did your unit temporarily drop below 10? No, it didn't. Get 3 to 5 guys back. Tide of Muscle. This one is neat. In your charge phase, you select a boys unit to charge, and until the end of the phase, each time your unit declares a charge, add the current battle round number to the charge roll. We have a lot of stuff that supports early game charges. This is a cool one to support a late game charge. When you have to make that charge.
Yeah, turn 5, I'm getting over there. I'm going to make sure that I make that charge.
And then go get them in your opponent's shooting phase just after they've selected a boys unit as a target. After the attacking unit has shot, your unit can make a go get them move. Roll a d6. Each model unit can then move in that many inches as a result, but you must end that move as close as possible to the closest enemy unit. When doing so, these models can be moved within engagement range of that enemy unit. If your unit contains 10 or more models, it can move up to 6 inches when making that move instead.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a classic Berserker move.
Yep. I like them.
This is such a strong detachment. This is so good.
Yep.
Like, I don't see anything bad here at all. Like, yeah, I'm with you. I think this is actually ends up being stronger than the just default. Like, the default's good for a mixed orc army, but man, this one for just leaning into boys and having a, like going for the big board control, whew, it's fantastic. There's not a bad thing there. And then finally, Bully Boys, which is all about the war boss and his knobs, which is not as dirty as it sounds.
Yeah, this detachment like actually kind of makes me happy, because this was when I kind of first got into orcs. This is actually kind of the way I played the orcs a lot, which was just lots of knobs and mega knobs. So like, it's kind of neat to see them get a detachment that is focused on them.
Right. And so, yeah, this is a detachment that is built around a war boss, Nobs, Mega Nobs. And so their detachment, the boss is watching. At the start of a battle round in which you have not called a WA, if you have one or more war boss models on the battlefield or in a transport on the field, you can call WA a second time this battle. When doing so, that second WA only counts for war boss, Nobs, and Mega Nobs units from your army.
So just have war bosses, Nobs, and Mega Nobs in the army.
Exactly. And then you have... And then you have everything you need. Your enhancements, Teleporta for the war boss in Mega Armor only. His unit gets Deep Strike.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah, that is kind of neat. The rest of these are for infantry war boss only. There's Big Gob. At the start of the fight phase, you select an enemy unit within engagement range of the bear. They must make a battle shock test at -1. And again, that's not a once per game. That is every turn. The biggest boss, add 2 to their wounds. And Ed Stompa, every time the bear makes an attack that targets a unit that's below starting strength, reroll wound rolls of 1. If they're below half strength, reroll the wound rolls instead. That's never bad. Just beating on the wounded until they die. And then I think, yeah, every strat here targets Nobs or Mega Nobs. Armed Detif, battle tactic, in your shooting or fight phase, when you select a Nobs or Mega Nobs unit, they can reroll hit rolls of 1. If a WA is active, they can reroll hit rolls. They can just reroll the hit rolls instead. Yeah, a number of these will have better. In fact, I think all but one of these have a bit better ability if a WA has been called, which makes that double WA option even more important. Too arrogant to die. After one of your Nobs or Mega Nobs units has been selected as a target from a shooting or fight phase, every time a model in your unit is destroyed, if that model has not shot or fought this phase, roll a d6, add 2 if a WA is in play. On a 5+, you don't remove them, and then they can shoot or fight after the attacking units finish their attacks. And then so they can fight or shoot on death, and they've got a 2/3 chance of doing it if a WA has been called. And that one only costs 1 CP, which is cheap for a fight on death one. Always looking for a fight. In the fight phase, just after an enemy unit was destroyed by a Nobs or Mega Nobs unit, make a D3+3 consolidation move. If a WA is active, it's a 6-inch consolidation. Crush an impact. In your charge phase, just after a Nobs or Mega Nobs unit completes a charge... this basically lets them tank shock. Roll a d6 for each model in your unit with engagement range. For each 5+, they suffer a mortal wound to a maximum of 6. If a WA has been called, they suffer mortal wounds on a 4+. Cut them down if a enemy unit chooses to fall back. When the enemy unit falls back from a Nobs or Mega Nobs unit, they have to make a desperate escape check. And when they do so, if a WA is active, they subtract 1 from each of those checks. We don't see desperate escapes pop up very often, but kind of nice to see. And then finally, Hulking Brutes. When your opponent shoots at one of your Nobs or Mega Nobs unit, you worsen the AP of that attack by 1. And that's not a bad thing because Mega Nobs are pretty tough.
Yeah, they're pretty tough, but they also don't have innately have an invulnerable save. So...
Mm-hmm.
Making the best use of their good armor save is important.
Yeah, because they've got a 2+ save. It's actually pretty solid.
Yeah.
All right, so those are the 6 detachments. I do think, gosh, I think the Green Tide is the big winner out of all of those as far as, like they're all thematic, and they all look like they'd be fun to play, and they all support very different play styles, which is good. That's what you want from detachments.
Yeah, I think they did an excellent job with the detachments for this. Like, I think they all have, like, very good reason, you know, to actually play them if there's a particular style that you want to play. And, I mean, yeah, but I agree. Green Tide, I think, is just probably mathematically kind of the best one.
Yeah. Because I think your opponent's going to have a tough time chewing through that many bodies. especially when everybody's got a 5-up invulnerable all the time. No, it's that one is really good. But they're all good. They all, like, the Dread Mob just looks like that one's a blast to play, just from just a goofy, just crazy things happening on the table standpoint.
I think the Bully Boys is probably the one we'll see the least, just because that's probably the your points are probably going to fight you too much on that. And like, so it's probably just the least, like, kind of efficient form of orc army, because like the elite stuff is elite and really killy, but it's less survivable, and so it will, I think it'll probably struggle, like, on the tabletop realistically, but that said, it's still a personal favorite of mine, and it's cool, and I'm gonna want to try and play it.
Yeah, I don't think it won't be bad, but yeah, I do think points are where it's gonna suffer the most. So looking at data sheets, we won't dig into all the data sheets. We've already hit on a couple of the big changes. Boys getting sticky objectives I cannot overstate how huge that is for the army. And especially the fact that one of the best detachments leans into taking boys. You're going to be hard pressed to take objectives from them, especially when they're running 20 boys at a time. Otherwise, like, a few things I noted that, like, there's not a lot of changes here, but, like, Gazgul didn't change. And unfortunately, Gazgul hasn't been taken all that much lately. He lost a lot of his survivability from older versions of the game.
Yeah, it is true. Like, I think, like, I think the fact that there is now a detachment that caters to Mega Knobs helps a little. But like, yeah, he doesn't really change a whole lot. I do like one of the things that I caught in the fluff section is that they explicitly call out now that, like, Makari is just like the pet that, like, whenever he dies, like, they rush to replace him before Gazgul notices.
That's so they're great. Just so on Makari. It's not the Makari.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's like Xanathar's goldfish.
You better replace it before the boss notices. He'll get mad, and then some of us will die. But yeah, it's like a lot of the characters didn't change much, although we do need to, as always, in memoriam, pour one out for Captain Badruk, yeah. Boss Zagstruck,
Mad Doc Grotsnik, Knob on a War Banner with a War Banner, Big Mech with Custom Force Field, and the Mech Boy Workshop.
Yeah, which I don't even think they sell. That one's probably gone because they just don't sell it anymore.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, it's good scatter terrain, but at this point, so.
Yeah. It did surprise me, though, going through the fluff section. It's like Boss Zagstruck gets, like, a whole page spread detailing him and his fighting techniques and how he joins with Storm Boys and stuff like that. And Captain Badruk talking about, you know, the captain of the Free Buddhas and, you know, the with the best flash kits, and they're not in the book and you can't take them. There's no way to build something like them. So that seemed odd that they focused on them as much as they did. But such is life when they retire models.
And there is the one technically gone data sheet, which is the Knob on Smash a Squig. They just get rolled into the Squig Hog Boys data sheet,
which is not a bad thing, honestly.
Which, yeah, I kind of feel like they should have been there in the first place anyway.
Right. because he only existed to lead that model anyway, or lead that unit anyway. So just make him part of the unit, because as you also, as we pointed out earlier, the Beast Boss on Squigasaur is a leader now, and that would leave him unable to. They couldn't both be in a unit together, so this works better.
Yeah. Yeah, and the knob on Smasher Squig isn't like a separate model that you buy either. They were in the same box.
Mm-hmm. So just it this just works out better for everyone involved. It makes more sense. Totally fine with that. So yeah, you were the confirming the Beast Boss on Squigasaur what dropped to T8 and 8 wounds, as did the named version Mazrog Scragbad. Yeah. Pain Boss and Pain Boy, Weird Boy and Were Boy are pretty much unchanged.
I am kind of surprised that the Weird Boy is still in the book, considering he is a older fine cast model.
There's a number of those that are still in the book that surprised me. It's like, oh wow, you're still using this model.
The Tank Busters. Actually, it's the Weird Boy and the Tank Busters. But then there's like the Ludas and Burna Boys are also a very old kit, but they are still plastic.
Right. But yeah, so. Going through there, Zagrod also got a better pistol. He went from just a plain old Slugga pistol to a Squigstoppa anti-monster 4-up pistol. So that's good for him. Boss Snikrot gained lone operative while still being able to lead a unit. So his unit gets lone operative.
I did notice that.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of pretty cool. Boys and their sticky objectives. Otherwise, Beast Snagga Boys, which are kind of the new hotness, but I think you're really only going to see them in like the Hunt detachment, because that's where they're going to shine. Everything's going to key off of that, because they also aren't boys. They don't have the separate boys keyword. They have Beast Snagga Boys, but that's not the same thing.
Yeah. I will say, and like, this isn't something that changed from the index. Like, this is true from the index, but Gazgul does not have the monster keyword anymore. Like, he used to have, in the index, he lost the monster keyword. So that, like, that's not something that changed from index 40K, but like, the previous edition, he had always kind of had the monster keyword. He is just infantry now.
Another change I noticed for Knobs, or not for Knobs, for Mega Knobs, is that their Crumpin' Time ability changed. And while it does hurt them a bit offensively with the way that the Bully Boys detachment works, I think this is actually better for them in the long run. Is they went from having devastating wounds when you called a Wah to having a 4-up feel no pain when you call a Wah. And so while they don't have an invulnerable save most of the time when you call a Wah, now they have a 5-up invulnerable save and a 4-up feel no pain. And you can use a strat to use their armor better. So they gained a lot of survivability when you call a Wah. And with Bully Boys getting the double Wah, that's not bad. Storm Boys no longer blow themselves up when they try to charge after advancing or falling back.
What's the point of even taking them anymore?
And actually, before they could only charge after advancing, but that's when they risked blowing themselves up. Now they can fall back and charge or advance and charge at no risk. So, yeah, Storm Boys are in a actually pretty solid spot, if only they had a character who could lead them.
Right. Well, I don't know. Maybe it was the character that was making them blow up in the first place.
Very possible. I reserve the right to believe that eventually they'll release a plastic Boss Zagstruck and new plastic Storm Boys. Could happen. I'm not saying it is going to happen. I just reserve the right to believe that it might.
Belief is good.
Yeah. With the Flash Gets kit being a newer kit, I wish they'd make a plastic Captain Badrock.
And then otherwise, I looked through, like, yeah, War Bikers were pretty much the same. The truck was mostly the same, although I noticed a number of vehicles, not all, not the truck, but other vehicles had their firing decks number lowered. Like the battle wagon lost like half its firing deck. It was a 21. It's now an 11. And same with the hunter rig and kill. I think the kill rig also lost a lot of its firing deck. Although in exchange, the kill rig gained the ability to basically it's the hunter rig. It's the hunter rig that has transport capacity, or they both do. But the hunter rig was the one that went from like 21 to 11. But the Butcher Boy's attacks that they can make in melee actually gets more attacks based on how many boys are riding it. So that I thought was interesting. They're kind of trying to tone down the firing deck ability, like the open topped ability that the vehicles have. But yeah, like all the buggies look to be pretty much the same. I didn't pay attention to the flyers because why would you? Because no one runs them anymore. And yeah, like all the big stuff really was unchanged. And as I remarked before, the Stompa is unchanged both in, like, as far as we can tell in points. Because, like, as of the latest points update, there's still 800 points. So it's like, you can't even say this book is out of date because it was never changed.
Yeah. There was one other, like, small change, actually, I noticed to Gazgul. And that he now has a sweep attack.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So
which he didn't that have is, before.
So he, that's right. So yeah, he did gain an alternate method of fighting against multiple units. So that's good. It does give him a little bit more flexibility. Yeah. Hey there, editor's note. While editing, I realized we had missed a couple of small changes to Gazgul besides his sweep attack. One, he now has the War Boss keyword, which does key off of some of the stuff in the Bully Boys detachment pretty well. And then for his Prophet of the Great Wah ability, in the index it was, while he's leading a unit, that unit adds one to the hit roll and one to the wound roll on melee attacks. It now also allows them to crit on fives to hit if a wall was called, which is okay, but he can still only lead Mega Knobs. And while Makari is around, they can get lethal hits if a wall was called on a five up. I mean, Makari gives them a lethal hits aura anyway. So it's okay. It's not fantastic. Although, again, with Bully Boys, they can wah twice. They are Knobs, Mega Knobs, and a War Boss, so they can all benefit from the wah twice. So there is some utility if you're running Gazgul in a Bully Boys detachment. I don't know if you'll necessarily see him all that much. Oh, and they did specify there was one change on the trucks. On the truck, it cannot transport Gazgul Thraka. You can't dump guys out of the back of a truck. Whereas a battle wagon can transport Gazgul, he takes up 18 spaces worth of models. It can hold 22. No, I think that was true in the index, so that's not a new thing here, but I am amused that they had to specify, no, you can't try to cheat Gazgul in on a truck. He can be on a battle wagon, but he can also be in a Stompa, yeah, which has the same capacity as a battle wagon and has the same rule.
Yeah, it kind of makes me want to, like, I need to paint it, but I have one of those old armor cast battle wagons. That's just kind of like the little boat on wheels. It's got the and like just put Gazgul like sitting in that little, yeah, that'd be funny.
That would be great. And it did specify it is the Gazgul Thraka model that takes up 18 spaces, so you would technically need a 19th for Makari. because they are they do come together. They're a match set. But yeah, pretty much that's the updates and the new stuff in the Orc Codex. And I honestly have to say, like, it didn't massively change like the units too much, although again, the boys change is huge. But I do love the options that they have. Like the all the detachments look cool. I think what this pretty much says is they had the unit design pretty much where they wanted it. And I think orcs have been doing okay. I think they've been like firmly middle of the pack.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've paid attention to the Metal Watch. I think the last time I saw, like, they were like high middle last time I saw.
But yeah, I think orcs have been firmly like in the sweet spot where they want them. So I don't see that changing. I think that's still going to be pretty consistent with how they're going to perform. There's going to be a few new wrinkles. Like, people are going to have to figure out how to deal with, you know, 120 boys that have sticky objectives and a 5-up invuln that, you know, are coming for your face. That's going to be that's going to be something that people playing competitively are going to have to take into account in the meta. And I will also say that's a build that I don't know how well that would work in anything less than a 2,000 point game. Because let's see, if we go off of the newest points, a unit of boys, of 20 boys, is 170 points. So let's see, that's 1,020 points right there. So the most, so a green tide is going to be at least half, plus you're going to have probably at least two or three war bosses, which are only like 65 points. That still gives you a lot of points to throw in. Hey, maybe that's where you put the Stompa. You could distraction Stompa.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not saying it's like a good choice.
Make it easier. Well, yeah. I mean, it'd be an easier way of fitting a unit of 20 boys on the table.
That is true.
Because I bet the footprint of a Stompa is actually at least, Stompa is probably actually bigger if you've got them all like crowded in than a 20.
It would help with movement, like just kind of as your own movement trays, you know, just move the Stompa forward.
Well, let's see. And then, like, they specify knob models count as, or no, it's just mega armor and jump pack models count as two, which means war bosses only count as one. So you could have, let's see, with battle wagons being, like, battle wagons are 160. You could have three of those. That's 1695. You could have like three of the squads in battle wagons and still have another 300 points to work with, and not counting, this doesn't even count any upgrades. So, I mean, like, that's, there's going to be some interesting builds that still have like 120 boys on the table. Well, and as we said, you've got 220 points for a squad of like 10 knobs, and then like you could put one of the war bosses in with the knobs and have them always count as having 10 models, which that's the one thing we don't have the old points for. So based on the book, let's see, that was the Raucous War Collar. That's a 20 point upgrade. Yeah. And then we liked the Bloodthirsty Belligerents. That's still 1950. Throw in a unit of Gretchen.
Put a pain boy in a unit.
Oh,
a unit with the 5-up feel no pain and 5-up invuln, and can return a D3 units, D3 models once per battle.
So we could do like a pair of pain boys, three war bosses, three battle wagons, a unit of like five knobs, and still have like, and then the Raucous War Collar and the Bloodthirsty Belligerents, and then with all that you still have 20 points where you could put in like the Ferocious Show Off upgrade. Like you could do all three war bosses with the appropriate upgrades, and that's 1990 points. Like that, I would take that list. That'd be a
yep.
Because that list is going to, like, okay, fine, you killed the vehicles. Now chew through all the boys. Have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, that's the kind of list that people are going to have to adjust to play. So, yeah, I honestly think this one's a pretty solid book. I'm pretty happy. Like, and I'm guessing you are pretty happy with it, Richard?
Yeah. Yeah, I am liking this. Having pretty much every orc unit, and I can build pretty much any of these armies and be happy with the roles that I think that I have to play with them.
Yeah, I
just really like that there's multiple styles of play that are built in with those detachments, and they all seem to like have support and all seem to work, and you know, some are better than others, and that's always going to be the case, but they seem like they all do the things that you want them to do.
Yeah, they all have tools that will help you succeed at the game, whether it's, you know, getting, and also to do it in a way that is going to feel appropriately orky. Like that, I think that's the thing, is like none of these feel out of character. Like they all feel right. So yeah, I think this one we're pretty happy with. We will be back in a couple of weeks with Dennis to talk about the Adeptus Custodes Codex. So we will, you know, regroup then and talk about the Golden Boys, which will be a much smaller book. Obviously, fewer units. I think it has one Tau Codex's worth of detachments. Yes, I'm still bitter. Ha ha. So, but yeah. Until then, that'll be episode 299, and then episode 300. I think will just about be our coverage of Midwest Conquest, or right beforehand. So yes. Remember, if you are interested in joining us in Kansas City for Mother's Day weekend, May 10th through 12th, if you want to play in the Preferred Enemies narrative campaign that Dennis and Kevin are rolling, or if you want to play in the GT, or just check things out, or if you are an Age of Sigmar player who wants to get the last little bit of love out of their Beasts of Chaos or Sacrosanct chapter or Sacrosanct Chamber Stormcast, there's a Age of Sigmar tournament there as well. So go to MidwestConquest.com and we would love to see you there. But until then, from all of us here at Preferred Enemies, I'm your host, Rob.
Kevin.
And Richard.
Good night, good gaming, and remember, go green or go home. Preferred Enemies is an Undergopher Radio production and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 Unported License. Our theme music is Metal Slug 2 Super Vehicle 001/2 No Need to Reload, originally by Takushi Hayamuda and remixed by Ro Ataka, courtesy of OC Remix. It can be found at ocremix.com.